everybody. Welcome back to West Coast Projects Podcast for Orange is the New Black. I'm Michelle.
And I'm Jessica.
Hey, Jessica. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So, Jessica, we are podcasting Orange is the New Black. This is your second episode. We're doing Season 3, Episode 4. Did you have any overall thoughts about the episode?
Not really. I was watching it, and I kept looking for something that we would have to talk about with it, and it just kind of seemed maybe like they're, I don't know, rebuilding the story, but this episode seemed kind of slow to me, personally.
Okay. There was some things that I just think need to be said here. It needs to be said for me, and it's not just this episode specific. There's others as well, but I think it's time to just get it out on the table. We usually decide to which series to podcast long before they air, of course, and we have no idea what their content's going to be or anything like that, so we don't know if something's going to hit a nerve with us or be offensive or what kind of chord it might strike, and I think that's kind of what makes podcasting interesting, because you watch the episode, and then you talk about it, and you talk about how it has affected you. Sometimes, to me, it seems like we live in such a politically correct society, except where it comes to Christianity. And I personally am just tired of having my religion mocked for a few laughs. It's offensive to me. And let me be extremely clear that I'm not talking about highlighting and calling out hate groups that are disguised as religion. That's not at all what I'm talking about. I'm talking about religion in general, Christianity in specific. I like Orange is the New Black. I've liked the show from the get-go, but I've got to say that this episode, to me, crossed the line. And while we go through this episode, I want it to be known that I did notice the religious jibes, but I'm not going to give them the attention that they were so obviously just stuck in this episode to garner. I'm personally disappointed that the show stoops to this level for a laugh, and that's just something I really felt like I needed to get off my chest before I got started. Do you have any thoughts on any of that?
Honestly, I can think of a couple instances where this episode was mocking Christianity, but it's not even in my notes. I just completely overlook it, I guess, because that's what society teaches us to do. You know, that's what we're supposed to be, just quiet.
Well, that's exactly what I've done. I mean, I've been podcasting now for a good little while, and I find myself just keeping it quiet and keeping my opinions to myself. But some of these things were so offensive, and we wouldn't do it, I don't think, in other situations. It's not socially acceptable to do that, and I don't understand why it is socially accepted to do it to Christianity. And by the way, I would like to think that I would be just as offended if they were doing it to other religions. I don't like it. Don't want to be made to feel bad for not liking it. And I think it's fair for me, since I am reviewing the show, to say it's offensive, I don't like it, I think it's a cheap shot for laughs, and I think that the writers of this show are better than that. Anyway, fair enough?
Fair. That's fair.
Okay. All right, we'll start with season one. We have Crazy Eyes. She's waking up everybody because she's having a bad dream. And I don't know if you noticed or not, she's running like a dog.
Yes.
In the dream. It seems like, you know how your dog will do the little running
like,
motion
itch,
as
yeah.
He's dreaming? She needs to warn everybody or warn V about something. And everybody is tired of it. They're fed up. This is evidently an ongoing thing with her. And they jump up and
jump her case.
Kind of have, yeah, wake her up and all that. Anyway, we flash to the morning and the intercom tells everybody to wake up. And Crazy Eyes just wakes up and she's all happy and refreshed. And everybody else is just ill and bitter.
Yes.
Then we see that Red is waking up and she's smelling Nikki's hairbrush. I thought that was kind of sad.
It's so sad. She says that, you know, Piper's giving her a funny look for it, and she tells Piper she wouldn't understand because she's not a parent.
Yeah.
That was a little heartbreaking.
Yeah, Yeah, it truly was. It was, you could really feel how much she missed Nikki and stuff, and it was pretty sad. I thought that was sad, but Piper's blaming Loosecheck, which we've decided that it is Loosecheck's fault that he pinned Nikki, right? That's what we decided last week, right?
Yes.
But it's Nikki's fault, too.
Well, of course.
And really, it's kind of Nikki's fault more than it is Loosecheck's fault. She had the stuff in there to begin with. She's the one that took some of it out and hid it in Loosecheck's desk, for goodness sake. I don't really know how I feel about Piper having this kind of animosity toward Loosecheck.
Well, Piper doesn't know that she's the one who took it out and hid it. She just knows that they were conspiring together.
Does she? Does she even know that? Or does she just think that, oh, maybe that's it then. Maybe Piper thinks that it was Loosecheck and he blamed it on Nikki.
You know, they're really the only two people that know the whole story are Loosecheck and Nikki. And Loosecheck isn't going to talk. And Nikki's and Max, so there's really, I wasn't even thinking about that. You look at it from the viewer's perspective of it, you know?
Right, because we know. We've seen, like, the whole thing come into fruition, but Red does tell her that Nikki admitted to it, and she still wants to blame Loosecheck.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't really know that.
Nikki didn't directly admit to it, did she? She just said, I'm a screw up.
I think that was admitting, because Red came to her. Remember, she said, if you were having a problem, you could have talked to me and all that. And Nikki was like, I'm just a screw up. That's admitting it.
Yeah.
I mean, she might not have went into detail about it, but.
Well, there was no time.
Next we see Boo. Boo's walking in to talk to Pennsylvania asking for some toothpaste.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That was hysterical and awful.
That was pretty good. Yes, I know. I know. Pennsylvania without any qualms at all says she doesn't need toothpaste anymore because she has porcelain crowns.
I love Boo's response to that. She said, man, your parents didn't even do the bare minimum with you.
I think that's one of the things that we see with Boo a lot. Boo is pretty educated, pretty well read. Do you get that from her?
I do.
Okay. Boo sees the cards that Pennsylvania has received from the anti-abortion crowd. She realizes that they're sending her money. And this is where Pennsylvania sits down and she confesses that she shot the nurse because she was mad, not because she was anti-abortion. And she tells Boo that she probably shouldn't take the money anymore. It's time to right the wrongs. And Boo says, no way.
Right.
Boo's aghast that she would even come up with that. And then we flash to Boo as a child. And her mom is wanting her to wear a dress. And I think we're seeing some of Boo's backstory here. She's obviously a really non-feminine girl. And it's pretty upsetting to her mother.
Well, that dress would have upset me.
You know, can we talk about that dress for just a minute?
That dress was really bad.
It was really bad. It was really, really bad. If Boo, I don't blame Boo at all. And I don't know that I would have reacted a whole lot differently to that dress specific, although I don't know that that was necessarily the problem, but Boo is really fussy about it. Her dad comes in and tries to talk her into it and says, do it for your father who has to live with your mother. But Boo's pretty upset about it. She really doesn't want to do it.
But she gives in.
She does give in, very, very reluctantly.
Yeah.
She gives in. Next, we see Alex is complaining to Piper that they aren't getting it on anymore.
Lesbian bed death.
Collective, yay. I mean, no. Piper's stressed because it's June 7th, and Alex keeps on with sexual innuendos, and blah. It's just overkill. I'm just beyond that scene between them.
How have we reduced Piper to this?
Good point.
in seasons,
that's a really good point.
One and two, you know, it's really like her story of what happened with her, and now it is her bedroom diaries.
It's her sex life with Alex.
Yes.
Or not. And I agree, and that's a really good point. There was a lot of speculation about where this was going to go with Piper because, of course, this is based on a true story. I don't know how closely based, but the story was kind of told. Of course, not the ending of it or anything, but the story was told. The story was of the transition into the jail and the problems and challenges associated with that. And there was a lot of speculation on where it was going to go, and I really do feel like they've kind of cheapened this with her.
With a lot of it. It went from, like, when I first watched the first season, my husband would walk in and he'd be like, why are you watching this awful, depressing show? This is terrible. And now mm-hmm. it's almost like a comedy at the expense of everything that was built up in season one and two.
Yeah, and I think season one and two had a lot of comedy thrown in it too, but
they had comic relief so you would continue watching it instead of just it's all a big joke now.
I agree. Okay, next we have the COs. They're fueling up on donuts and coffee. They don't like that Caputo didn't get them cream because Fig used to do that. Caputo is essentially telling them about the possible situation that this company, is it MCC, yeah. I think, is going to come in, and they're not buying the prison. It's still going to be a federal prison. Now, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but they're just going to manage it.
Right.
It's a long shot, and Caputo doesn't think it's going to work out, but he's going to put his best foot forward to see if he can get it to happen. And the COs, I don't know, they are talking about how it smells fishy and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but Caputo kind of takes the attitude of, what do you have to lose here?
Yeah, yeah, he asked him, how does unemployment smell?
Right.
So I thought that was pretty good. Okay, next we have Crazy Eyes, and she sits down at the lunch table with the girls, and everyone is really being mean to her.
Well, everyone gets a little cranky without sleep.
They're cranky, they haven't gotten enough sleep, and she just won't let the V thing go.
Yeah.
The whole V thing is, she can't let go. Pusea is sitting across from her and says that V is dead, and Crazy Eyes starts hitting herself and screaming and going crazy. The CO comes up and says that Tasty should stop Crazy Eyes. Now, we're kind of seeing where Tasty is being put in charge of her here. And I think we might have even seen that in the last episode a little bit, like Tasty has to calm her down. But Tasty's tired of it, you can tell. She's tired of the whole situation. And it's just like this really stressful thing where she's having to be responsible for Crazy Eyes.
Well, there are so many feelings that I don't feel like they really went into with everything with V. You know, I mean, V was not just a part of Crazy Eyes' life. She's part of Tasty's life. She, you know, had a big relationship with the whole group. You know, they had their little business that they were doing, and there was a lot of bad feelings, which is probably why the other girls are getting so upset having to continue hearing about her.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But she was not a good person, and Crazy Eyes was the only one who didn't realize that.
And also, are you remembering how Crazy Eyes was really, like, sucked in to V, and how mean she got? She was like V's watchdog. She's the one who beat up Husei.
Right.
Remember?
I do.
So, I don't know that we can blame Husei for being very offended that Crazy Eyes continues to, I don't know, defend, talk about, wish well V.
Right. No, it's just, okay. it's just an afterthought, you know, everyone kind of wants to move past it, and Crazy Eyes is not letting that happen.
Okay, then we go to Marilla, and she's all stressed out, and she's crying about Nikki. Then we flash to Daya, and she's mad because Bennett's gone. She's throwing food around. the women are just all stressed out. Everybody is stressed out and mean, and we see the CO standing there watching over them and noticing.
Right. Well, because they have the investors coming.
They do, but this was a pretty sad lot all the way around with everybody, didn't you think?
Well, yeah, but, you know, they're supposed to make sure that all of the inmates are on good behavior, and everyone, it's a really bad day for the MCC to be coming.
It really is. It's not the best time with everybody in their individual and collective
right
sass going on, so I agree. Okay, now we see Boo, and she's out in the dumpster, and she's pulling some cardboard out for Sister Ingalls, because remember, they don't have mattresses on their bed, so
right.
She's getting her some cardboard out for that, and Boo is trying to get Sister Ingalls to kind of coach her on how to take advantage of Eastburg Baptist. I wonder who that's making reference to.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even, like...
Did you? Surely you did.
That's with me. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but she says, Eastburg Baptist, all hate, all the time. There's a guy that's going to come. Reverend Lawler is going to come see her, and she's going to say how she's changed and all this kind of stuff, and that's... She is basically setting herself up to fleece the people of the church based on what Pennsylvania has done.
Right, so she can
get her situation.
Make money. So they'll start sending her money.
Yes, the whole thing is just a money-making scheme on her part. A bilking scheme to bilk these people out of their money.
And she's looking to Sister to give her the cliff notes of what she needs to say.
Okay, next we have a flashback to Boo, and she's in a bar, and she's taking bets and stuff. She is... drinking, I guess, rum and coke, and it tastes like vacation in a cup. Did you know that?
I did. Now, well, I didn't, but I do now.
Boo's name is Carrie, and we find that out. I'm sure we've heard it before, but I don't know that I remember it. There's a girl that comes in. Her name's Tracy. They walk out together, and Boo invites her back to her place for a drink. As they're walking down the sidewalk, they're holding hands, and a young guy comes up, and he calls them dykes. And Boo loses her mind.
That guy did not know the mistake he was making, and I bet that's the last time he called anyone a dyke.
Hopefully, and yet it certainly didn't bring Boo to a good light in front of this girl that she had just met.
No, the girl goes to leave. She's completely, I'm horrified, I'd be horrified.
Well, yeah, I mean, somebody you just met, and they're going to have that kind of reaction. Whether the reaction is warranted or not, it was just like a lack of self-control.
Right.
And then we see that this is just kind of Boo's personality, because when the girl says, you know, you've kind of ruined this, I'm not going to go home with you, essentially. And Boo starts calling her ugly names.
Yeah, Boo does not like being questioned on her identity.
Yeah, and I think they're showing us that back from the time she was young and now up until this time, she really has a problem with, just like you said, being questioned or ridiculed or anything over who she is.
Yeah.
Next, we see Caputo. He is meeting with the MCC team. I don't know. I thought that whole scene was kind of unremarkable.
Yeah.
Danny is there. He seemed unsure of himself and was asking a lot of questions. But other than that, I didn't really get anything else out of that. Did you?
No, just that a cost thing for them. That's why the MCC is hesitant to pick up Litchfield, is because of their cost analysis. So whatever that may be, that's all I have in my notes.
So-So gets a visitor.
No.
We finally get to meet Meadow, and So-So is bitter. She's bitter hearing all of Meadow's hijink. Meadow says that it's so badass that So-So's here, and So-So loses her cool.
Yep.
Says it's not badass, it's not brave, it's not admirable, it's not courageous, it's stupid. She's stupid, and she feels stupid for thinking it would ruin her life.
And she's not okay. She's just existing.
Right. And then Meadow, in her really soothing way, says, you know, I drove 3 hours to get here, right?
Of course. So-So. Yeah, So-So's like, well, don't you never have to do it again. And just leaves. Like, that's it. She's done.
So we're seeing discord. It's just discord everywhere we turn so far. And then we go to Gloria, and she's talking to the lady that's watching her son.
Do we know who she is?
Yeah, we've seen her in a Gloria flashback, but I can't remember her name. I think she was a friend. I don't know that she's related, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
We'll try to find out. But her son's there, and he's out of control. The lady who's taking care of him says that she has no control over him, that the older he gets, the less he's willing to do what she tells him to do. And Gloria just freaks out and tells him he's going to show up every week, and he's going to bring his homework, and she's going to call her brothers if she has to. And she gives some pretty specific threats.
What, take him to a bridge and hang him upside down until he pees down his body into his mouth.
And the funny part of that is, did you see the look on the kid's face?
Oh, yeah, he was horrified.
Yeah, he believes that she means business.
He's met the brothers.
Well, there you go. But the woman says, I don't know what you're thinking about. You think I have time to drive him up here every week? So that upsets Gloria. So I don't know that we've got one group so far that's not upset.
Crazy Eyes seems okay when she's awake.
Well, she's okay until she freaks out, until anybody says anything at all about V, and then she loses it. But Crazy Eyes is like on a hair trigger anyway, so I don't know. I don't know if we can say Crazy Eyes and okay.
Okay, fair enough.
In the same sentence, I'm just not sure. Okay, next we have Healy. He takes the wheelbarrow from Red, and he thanks her for calling him a good man. He's sorry about Nikki. He touches Red's arm, and you see Red, like, visibly soften.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying she thought she could save Nikki. Healy gives about the best advice you can have. He says if someone jumps into shark-infested waters, you just can't save them.
But just read my notes. I mean, seriously, that's all I have written down exactly.
But I kind of got, this was the first time that I've seen Red soften toward Healy.
Yeah, they have some sort of something starting or feeling, or you can see it. Healy's taking special interest in Red, and Red is responding kindly, which we don't see Red do often. So,
well, kindly, and I think she was even surprised at her reaction. It seemed like I kind of got the impression that she wasn't expecting to respond that way to Healy, but she really kind of let him in. It's like she confided in him.
Mm-hmm.
Amazingly enough, Healy had pretty good advice for her. Okay, next we see the MCC group, and they're walking into the kitchen cafeteria part, and of course we got Crazy in there talking to her mop about V. And Caputo's bragging about the cost of food in his cafeteria, and he's saying it's $1.79 per inmate per meal, $5.37 per day. He's throwing out these numbers to him, but they let him know that the national average is $1.58. They're not impressed with the cost-saving stuff that Caputo has done.
Right. That's still a very low amount per meal, isn't it?
I think it is... If you're talking about in your home, I don't know. It's very low, but I wonder, I don't know if we know if that counts subsidies or any kind of special deals. I don't know. I don't know that kind of thing. But yes, that's pretty cheap.
And then the investors start asking about their health problems, implying,
their
health
requirements, yeah. Yeah, they're talking about how housing females is harder because of that.
Yeah, because Murillo's over there crying.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole prison's really just kind of falling apart around them all. Everybody is a mess.
I love what the guard said, though. That cracked me up about how all of the inmates are synced up. So it's a rough couple days, but at least it's not spread out.
I don't think Caputo was very pleased with that.
That was hysterical. Just the reaction. That cracked me up.
Well, then we have the MCC group walk into the back, and they start asking Gloria about food, and she's just bitter. Gloria's bitter. She's just come from this meeting, this visitation with her son, and she didn't have anything good to say. And so Flocka comes up and starts talking about the lovely garbanzo bean stew they're served today.
Yep, they can stretch it out because they picked out the rotten ones. And Caputo tries to recover that of, you know, we find that our inmates are our best assets. It's uncomfortable. This whole thing with the MCC being there is completely uncomfortable. Anytime they were in the scene, I was uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, they're all dressed up in their suits and going through and just kind of picking everything apart. Okay, next we have Luzhchek. He's telling Piper how to work on the microwave and electrical, and she mouths off to him pretty hard. Caputo comes in, and Piper explains that she's trying to fix the microwave that broke yesterday, and Piper's pretty sassy. The guy says, "Can you fix it?" And she says, "She sure can if she can concentrate extra hard with her lady brain." Okay, next we go to Boo, and she's getting a makeover. They turn her around, and everybody screams except Pinstucky. And Pinstucky says, "You look weird." And Boo gets all upset, and she says she looks like her mother.
That was sad. It's sad.
And then we flash back to Boo having
relationships.
Non-angry relationships with a girl. The girl wants to ask her something, and Boo doesn't want to talk about it. The girl wants to talk about her mother. She knows that her mother's sick, and she thinks Boo should go see her mother, and the girl doesn't want Boo to regret it. And Boo just acts like it's really not any of the girl's business.
Right. She's having nothing to do with it either. She's
right.
Shows no interest in her mom being sick, and you really don't even see any emotion when she's talking about it. Of sadness, right. Like that she cares that her mom's sick. It's just, like telling her to take out the trash and she doesn't want to.
Right. Yeah, she's cut off. She definitely has those emotions cut off. And we don't know if maybe they're trying to show us now that she was so volatile for a long time that she just learned to cut it all off to stop that. Or if that was just in response to her mother. Or, I don't know. Next, we see Piper having visitation with her mom, her dad, her brother, and his wife.
I love her brother. Her brother, yes, he is hysterical. Just the stuff he talks about, I love it.
He's just happy. He's happy, and his wife's happy, and he's just, like, happy to be alive. His circumstances, remember he was, like, living in the woods or something?
Yes, I do.
And he's just happy. The mom's kind of sassed because Cal and his wife are staying with him longer than she thought they would because their reclaimed wood isn't in yet. Cal wants to open an ice cream shop, and Piper's dad won't talk. And that starts stressing Piper out. And then we find out why Piper was upset about June 7th because it's her birthday. Do we ever find out why Piper doesn't like her birthday?
I don't think so.
I don't remember hearing anything about it, but it's just like it's her birthday and...
Maybe because she's in prison for the birthday?
I don't know, because Alex earlier was like, oh, it's June 7th, like it was a big deal. Like, oh, I get why you're upset. And I thought when she said that, maybe it was the day her and Larry were supposed to get married or something, right?
Right.
No. And... then come to find out it's her birthday?
Yeah, I don't know. Some people don't like their birthday.
Yeah. But her dad has come, and he didn't have anything to say to her, and she wants to know why he came, and he says because it's her birthday and he never misses it. But he can't just sit there and make small talk with her. And here we find out she's 32. He says that she's getting farther and farther behind in life. And then she goes into one of her little kind of mantra things that she says, maybe this is exactly where she's supposed to be right now. Maybe this is making her a better person. And then she goes into the fact that she's learning Spanish. She can fix things. And then she throws out the bombshell. She has a girlfriend. And Cal's nodding and he's smiling. And so she's asked, are you officially? And she said, I officially have a girlfriend. Then she starts...
being Piper gross about it.
She does. She starts making sexual noises until her mom pinches her ear and her mom and dad get up and leave. Next, Healy finds Red in the hall and he gives her rose seeds. Because, I mean, well, he can't bring her roses, right?
Right.
How awkward would that be? How inappropriate would that be? But he can bring her a pack of rose seeds.
But then he tries to be all, like, sly about it. He was like, oh, is that what those are? Roses? And she's like, well, yeah, it says so on the packet.
Yeah, big letters right here. So she takes them kind of hesitantly and says, they'll make a lovely addition to the garden, thank you. And he's smiling after her as she's walking away and she is looking confused.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely likes her and he definitely likes her taking up for him. I don't think she has any idea what to think about him at this point.
No, but she's not being mean to him.
And if, no.
For Red, not being mean is like her version of being
nice. Yeah, yeah, good point. Good point. You're probably right, because we have seen her before kind of tell Healy what she thinks in no uncertain terms.
Right.
So. Okay, so we got the girls. They're sitting at the table in the TV room, and Judy King comes on, and Poussey especially is just tickled to death with her. She loves her. She's a TV cook and or a TV chef and lifestyle presentation and going into all this kind of stuff, and Poussey wants to watch her. They glance up into the hallway, and they see Crazy Eyes walking down the hallway through the window, and she has the mop on her head, and she's undressing.
Was it supposed to be like these hair? Is that what we're trying to go for here with the mop?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Well, I don't either. I was trying to figure out why Crazy Eyes does anything, but that's what I was trying to do, was figure that one out.
Well, she's crying and she's upset, so I don't really understand what the undressing would have to do with it, but who knows?
Well, she's
like that.
Wet from the mop.
Oh, well, that's a good point, too, yeah.
I don't know.
But she's walking down the hallway, just like undressing. I don't know, it was weird, but I think the point was is that the MCC people were coming in with Caputo as part of their tour, and so Tacy jumps up and runs after her and gets her out of the way as they're coming through, just in the nick of time, it looks like, too. Then we see Crazy Eyes in her bunk. Tasty's in there with her, and she helps her get dressed. She's helping her get dressed. And Crazy Eyes just lost it. She says that V came to her, and Tasty says that V's dead. And then she repeats it, and then she repeats it again. And then she breaks down. And that was pretty sad, because we've seen Tasty's backstory with V.
Yeah.
And it's just heartbreaking.
It really is. And I think that maybe that's why Tasty was the one who kept taking care of Crazy Eyes.
Yeah.
Because she's been there with V.
Maybe it was. They're bunkmates, too. I don't know if that's just her lot in prison just from the get-go, or if it's just been since V. I'm not sure. But that was pretty sad. And Crazy Eyes asks her, she said, is she gone? And Tasty says yes. And then Crazy Eyes looks at her and says, I am so sorry.
But
and Tasty says she is too. It's so sad.
It is, but it's like it finally got through to Crazy Eyes. Like maybe she needed to see someone else mourn for her to see that it was really happening, instead of V, you know, is dead and everyone's just like, yep, she's dead. Maybe
Crazy Eyes
needed that visual.
Right. Kind of like everybody's dancing around, ding dong, the witch is dead, and Crazy Eyes has lost a friend.
Right.
But there's heavy crying and total sadness and a shared moment, and then Crazy Eyes puts her head on Tacy's shoulder, and it's
sweet.
It was sweet, and it was touching, I thought. Then we see Piper. She climbs on Alex's bunk and tells her that she called her girlfriend to her family, and she didn't mean to, that it just came out, but now she can't stop thinking about it, and they do this little cutesy, will you be my girlfriend? Check one, yes, no. And then they drum roll, kiss. Opinion is just so overdone. And I think it just comes back to what you said earlier, how they've reduced this, what was a really intriguing part of the show, to this.
Right.
Season
one, I watched this show for Piper.
Sure.
Everything else was backstory and good backstory, but I wanted to know about Piper, and now they could remove Piper from the show, and I don't even think I would notice.
Which is kind of sad.
It really is, because that's really, like, supposed to be at least in part her story.
Okay, but I gotta tell you that I did like this one part. Alex couldn't make her a CD mix, so she just wrote the names of the songs on a piece of paper.
That was creative.
I thought that was funny. And that was nice. That was a nice thing. And it was for her birthday, although it wasn't for her birthday. Because it just happened to be today.
Right.
Okay, then we see the MCC group and they're walking down the hallway. And Daya stops them. And she's really kind of strong-arming Caputo, didn't you think?
Yes. She backed him into a corner. And she really did. Like,
she
you
really
know, I
did.
Didn't talk
she
to
demanded.
You.
Right.
Yes. Theo Bennett. And
yep.
It's, okay, let's go talk.
And he tells her to make the same assumptions he has, that Bennett's gone.
Yeah, unfortunately for both of them, not everyone around here is locked up.
And it's pretty cold. I know he's frustrated, but in his defense, if he needs it or if I can give it, he never did like that situation between them. This is nothing new on Caputo's part as far as him being hostile toward the relationship between Daya and Bennett.
Bennett went and tried to turn himself in, and Caputo was just like, we're just not going to talk about this. So now, I mean, it is going to come back on him. Of course it's going to come back on him. He swept it under the rug so he could end up in Fig's position. He couldn't have anything going bad then.
I just don't see how anything good can come of this. I don't see how the truth won't eventually come out anyway.
Right. Well,
in the Bennett-Daya situation.
I don't know, maybe that's why he took off? So he wouldn't.
That's not why he acted like he took off, remember?
Oh, I know. He acted like it was because he was completely freaked out by it all.
Well, and who wouldn't be? I mean, he just left that dinner party, if you can call it that, where Daya's mother's boyfriend pulled a gun on the kid to get him to eat soggy French fries, and he realized that's what his child essentially was going to be growing up in.
But then to leave it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not defending him. I just, not in any way. I don't know.
I don't. Time will tell on that, I hope.
There's just no, I cannot see a good end to this. You know this is going to end up blowing up.
Yes. Yes, I do.
I just can't imagine it coming to a good end. But then Daya walks away and she's upset, and the MCC people ask if that inmate was pregnant.
And Caputo denies it.
Lies. Yep, he lies, and he says, and by the way, you should never assume that about a woman.
And then in her boo, he walked up, and right as he said that, he was like, you should never assume, I learned that the hard way, and kind of starts joking about it, and Boo walks up and goes, oh, well, a big heterosexual hello to all of you, and looks at him, and she's like, what, is anyone buying this? Anyone?
And you can't help but think, poor Caputo. I mean, could this be going any worse for him than it is?
Oh, I know.
Okay, then we flash back to Boo, Carrie, again, going into the hospital to visit her mother. And her dad's outside the door, and he's all tore up and everything. But he really doesn't want her to go in. He asks if it would have killed her to put on some other clothing. And Boo says her mother's had 42 years to have learned to accept her. And he calls Boo's outfit a costume, and he says that
we all wear costumes.
We all wear costumes. Do you think I want to wear a suit and tie 5 days a week? It's what you have to do. And he won't stop her, but she needs to decide if her costume is worth upsetting her mother. And this is where she goes into the fact that she's had to fight for this her whole life, and she won't be invisible for him or her mom. And she says she's sorry, and she turns and walks away. And her father's upset. He's sitting there pained, and she's crying. And the whole situation was just pretty sad.
It was very sad. some correlation has to be drawn here of she would not change her clothes to see her mother, but she's dressed up like a big heterosexual hello to meet with the Reverend to get money.
But see, I think that's kind of what they're contrasting here. I took it as that's the point of this, is that even to placate her dying mother, she wouldn't change who she was. Then, as we go into this next scene and we see that Reverend Lawler is in there to meet with her, and she can't change for that either. So,
yeah.
At least we're seeing some consistency with it. She meets with the Reverend, and Pence Tucky, and he calls her Tiffany, has told him great things about Carrie. And she schmoozes him, and she's had a lot of time to think, and he starts throwing out really derogatory, hate-filled terms. And Boo is upset over it, but she's trying to control herself and everything, and she asks him if he can take up a collection to help support her. And he says that her story of wickedness and depravity will touch people.
And calls her the thieving dyke.
And then she just explodes and starts throwing chairs and screaming and behaving as we've seen her.
No. She didn't explode when he said that. The thing that got her was whenever he said that they would have to cover up, make her invisible, cover up her butch tattoo.
Right.
That was the covering up part of who she is. She can deal with it. She's muffled down the name. She's muffled down the stigma that's going with those names. But whenever he mentioned just covering up the butch tattoo, that's when she lost it.
Okay, but come on, though. She's covered up the hair. She's covered up everything else, including the demeanor. She's lying about who she is, but suddenly having to cover up a tattoo when she's putting herself out there to be a changed person, and the tattoo, I mean, that would, if she had truly, like, changed, she wouldn't want that tattoo, you wouldn't think, on her arm, if she had changed the way she's putting herself forth to have changed, and suddenly that's going to be the thing?
Well, I'm just saying that goes back to Boo's talk of being invisible.
Yeah. Plus, she's just had this memory of her mother. We assume that's what it is, not just a backstory, but like a memory, because she had been sitting in the beautician chair and saying that she looked like her mother.
Yeah.
But she can't do it. She can't make a go of it, so she's not going to be able to con the people out of money.
Right.
Then we see Caputo is seeing the MCC guys out, and he tells Ford to polish up his resume.
And
it doesn't look like things going to go very well.
No, it went. Everything that could go wrong, minus the prison catching on fire, went wrong.
Pretty much, yeah. Then we have Gloria, and she's sitting outside her kitchen smoking, and Daya comes up and asks for a cigarette, and Gloria wants to know if she's okay, and she says no, and she talks about Bennett being gone, and Gloria knows, and he's a piece of crap like all of them, and she can't believe that he's left them, and Gloria gives her a cigarette and says it's not the worst thing that's going to happen to that kid.
That was sad.
That was really sad. It was sad to see this. It was sad to see her, Daya, come into this realization that she's been left.
And then, you know, go into Gloria, who is experiencing that with her kid, you know? Not being able to be there for her kid and what it's turning Gloria's kid into without... I'm not saying it's just because Gloria's in prison. You never know what's going on in that kid's life, but Gloria is completely helpless.
Right. She doesn't have any control over her kid, and Daya's going to have this kid, and certainly not the amount of control she would want to have over him. And then she even says to Daya, if you were my kid, then she goes, you'd still be screwed up or something.
Yeah.
You'd still probably be screwed up. So she's feeling pretty down on herself as a mother, too. Then we go back to Pence Tucky, and she's glad Boo is back. And they sit and they talk in the bunk room. Boo wishes she'd said goodbye to her mother, but she didn't.
No.
And Pence Tucky told her that she was brave today. And Boo says she was dumb, and she got 5 extra weeks or 5 weeks of extra work duty for that outburst, I guess, she had in the visitation room.
Yeah.
Boo brought her some toothpaste and tells her she needs to start brushing her teeth seriously. And Penn's Tucky says she's still taking their money, and
they high-five over it. And
yep. And then Boo says tomorrow they'll start talking about floss.
And Penn's Tucky says no, she's not doing it. Like that stringy stuff?
Yeah. She's not going to have she can't believe it. But she is touched by the toothpaste and says she'll give that a try.
Yeah, she'll give it a shot, but it's a waste of her time.
Robbie, she doesn't think it works that way. Caputo's looking at a jobs listing site on his computer, and his phone rings, and it's Danny. MCC's going to be taking over Litchfield as soon as the paperwork goes through, and Caputo is just like he thought everything went wrong that could have went wrong, and he's so surprised, but Danny looks forward to working with him. Caputo is so relieved, he takes a shot of whiskey, then he screams woohoo a couple times, and then he gives a little dance.
Yep.
Caputo's happy.
Caputo is happy. It's about time someone's happy in this show today.
Dang, I know, really. Then we see Crazy Eyes. She's walking back into her bunk, and she sees Tasty asleep, and she crawls in bed with her. She's grinning. She throws her legs over. Tasty freaks out.
Says, oh, hell no.
Crazy jumps up and grins and gets back in her own bed. She was too far.
And Crazy Eyes, just checking. I was just checking.
And then we fade out with some hip-hop music playing in the background. And that's pretty much it for season 3, episode 4.
I didn't feel like there was a ton to really expand on in that episode. Maybe next episode. Maybe it was building us up, but I just didn't feel like there was it was a huge conversation piece, you know?
Well, yeah, but I do think that they're setting us up with MCC and all the changes that are going to come with another organization running the prison. They kind of had to do that, maybe.
Yeah.
Although some of the stuff, maybe not. It wasn't my favorite episode.
No, I didn't. It took me a while to get through it and get all my notes taken on it because I got maybe a little worn out with it.
Yeah, but I bet next week's easier.
Fingers crossed.
Maybe. We really hope you'll connect with us and become part of our new Orange is the New Black podcast. Don't forget you can find us on the web at westcoastproject.com. You'll see a list of many, many podcasts there, and we hope that you'll watch some of them and like them. Many of you might enjoy them if you enjoy us here. You can email us at support@westcoastproject.com. Search for us on Facebook, West Coast Project, and all of this info is on the West Coast Project website. Or interact with us on Twitter. We always have some fun conversations there. I am at Michelle from TN, and what's your Twitter?
I am at Jess the Hippie.
At Jess the Hippie. We hope y'all contact us there and get into some conversations. Let us know who's listening to us and let us know what you think. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn, and if you like us, we'd love to have you rate us. So until next time, be sure to brush and floss, and I guess we'll see you next week.
Oh, God.
Okay, we'll see you then.
Yeah, we'll see you then.
All right, we'll see you then. Bye-bye.